This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up with the release of each batch of recovered emails from the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, more questions are raised than answered. Did Secretary Clinton use her office to raise money for the Clinton Foundation? Some say that's true. At least one senator says that question should be answered in the next 60 days. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton joins me in just a moment. Also, is the Obama administration moving to federalize the election system in the United States? Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann is here on that story. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's guest. Also, information about the Values Voter Summit. We're on the eve of the Values Voter Summit. It begins tomorrow morning here in Washington, D.C. at the Omni Shoreham. There's still room. There's still room. That's right. You can, if you start making your way here now, you'll be here by tomorrow morning. It's going to be a great weekend. Actually, tomorrow afternoon, Donald Trump will be speaking. Mike Pence will be there Saturday morning. Our next guest will be there. There's just the lineup of conservative leaders and Republican officials and others. It's a long lineup. You can see it at TonyPerkins.com. I'll mention some of those a bit later. But first, I want to get on to our news items for today. You know, since its inception, the Clinton Foundation has taken in over $2 billion. It now employs over 2,000 people. Now, there have been ongoing questions about the activities of the Clinton Foundation for some time, but recently released emails of the former Secretary of State suggest that she used her position as Secretary of State to raise funds for the foundation. Now, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas believes these allegations need to be cleared up before the November election, stating, quote, "I hope it can be resolved before the election and certainly before the next president takes office," end quote. There are clearly some indications of potential criminal wrongdoing that the FBI should pursue without undue influence from Loretta Lynch or political appointees within the Department of Justice, he says. What does the senator have planned? Well, he joins me now with the answer to that, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's great to be back on with you, as always.
And by the way, looking forward to having you at the Values Voter Summit. Folks will be able to hear you as you come and are a part of that as well. So looking forward to seeing you there. But I want to address this issue. You're from Arkansas. You're very familiar with the Clinton family and the political operation they have going there. What concerns you most about these allegations that she may have been engaged in what's called pay-to-play or play-to-pay?
Well, Tony, you're right that we in Arkansas are not too surprised to know that the Clintons are yet again facing pay-to-play allegations. I have long said that the email controversy and the foundation controversy are not two separate controversies. I think they are intimately linked because I suspect one of the main reasons Hillary Clinton wanted to set up a private email server to conduct official business is because the business of the Clinton Foundation and the State Department was intertwined. This was the main issue at her confirmation hearing in 2009. It was also such an important issue to Barack Obama's senior advisors that they had to sign a memorandum of understanding between the West Wing of the White House and the Clinton Foundation to police conflicts of interest. And it would appear that the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton violated that memorandum with the White House, at least in spirit, if not in the letter, by acting as essentially a concierge service for the Clinton Foundation. You know, if you made a big donation to the Clinton Foundation, you got direct access to Hillary Clinton or some of her senior advisors and appointees. That's not the kind of thing that your listeners could get.
I mean, that obviously is activity that would be unlawful and would require action. Who has the responsibility, now that this information is out there, that would suggest, and we're just saying that it looks very suspicious, who has the responsibility to follow up on that?
Well, we have a responsibility as Congress to conduct oversight hearings. And I know that Jason Chaffetz in the House of Representatives is moving forward with those hearings. They should be happening this month. So hopefully we can air these allegations and learn exactly what happened before the election. Of course, in the executive branch, the FBI should be able to investigate this. I've heard conflicting reports of whether or not they have an open investigation into the Clinton Foundation or not. I have to say, I have my doubts about their ability to conduct that investigation free of political influence, given the fact that Loretta Lynch met with Bill Clinton on a private aircraft in Arizona just a few days before the FBI cleared Hillary Clinton in the email controversy. But the FBI certainly needs to move forward with an investigation, given the revelations we've seen in recent emails where staffers at the Clinton Foundation and the State Department were communicating repeatedly about securing high-level meetings or briefings with Clinton Foundation donors. I think it's only prudent that they do move forward and that the American people know exactly what the arrangement was between the State Department under Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation before they potentially entrust her not just the State Department, but the entire government as the President of the United States.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, my guest, discussing recently released emails that suggest, and I emphasize suggest, that there could have been a pay-to-play scheme between Hillary Clinton and her foundation. Those wanting to meet with her or her top staff at the State Department when she was Secretary of State made contributions to the Clinton Foundation. Now, Senator, this is no small foundation. As I mentioned, over the course of about 19 years, they've had about $2 billion pass through. But it's interesting. I mean, we're talking in 2013, they raised $262 million. 2015, $223 million. But what was interesting about this in some of the data that I saw is that in 2013, they had 350 employees. Within 2 years, that had ramped up to 2,000. Is there any suggestion or any evidence to suggest that maybe there's a political motive to this foundation?
Well, I mean, I think one of the key parts of the foundation's work is to advance the Clinton family's ambitions. It's to keep Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton in the news. It's to fund their lifestyle, to pay for jet travel and accommodations, and to pay for the retainers for all of the various hangers-on they had. People like Sid Blumenthal, who been operating in the Clinton machine for decades. If you look online, there's a great essay by Walter Russell Mead, a noted scholar, and someone who's not a rabid Republican, called The First Postmodern Political Machine. And he compares the Clinton Foundation to the old ethnic urban machines of the late 19th century, this driven around family and around fame and around money, not around a cohesive ethnic group inside of a big city, the way you might have seen with Tammany Hall. I think Walter really nailed it, that the Clinton Foundation, whatever good work it has done, is foremost about advancing the fame and the power of the Clinton family. And that's why you can see, as soon as Hillary Clinton got into office, the number of donations increased, Bill Clinton's speaking fees increased, as you say, the number of employees and donors increased, and why it's so troublesome that Hillary Clinton won't immediately stop, for instance, accepting corporate and foreign donation right now, not waiting till after the election. Why she won't say that she's going to break ties entirely with the foundation if she becomes President of the United States. I mean, obviously, the conflicts just couldn't be more apparent. To have a sitting president associated with a family foundation that has been the recipient of contributions from all kinds of repressive governments and shady oligarchs and political operators.
Senator, are you the only one on the Senate side that has concerns about this, or have some of your colleagues there in the Senate expressed concerns as well?
I may be the one with the deepest experience since I came from Arkansas, but I'm not the only one. Lots of senators, just like lots of congressmen, have expressed these similar concerns, and they want to see public hearings. They want to get to the bottom of this before the election, so the American people understand exactly what Hillary Clinton was up to when she was Secretary of State, which is a pretty good predictor of what she might be up to if we give her even more power and entrust her with the presidency.
Now, as you mentioned, Congressman Chaffetz in the House, they have suggested, they're actually calling for a special prosecutor. They're going to look into this. We've had them on the program. What about the Senate? Can we expect any type of hearings in the Senate to look into this within the next 60 days?
Now, I don't know what the schedule is for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. That would be the most likely committee, since it oversees the State Department to conduct these hearings. Again, I think it would be appropriate if the House fully airs all of the issues. You know, that'll be effective. But Congress as a whole needs to ensure that we have a thorough and fair and public accounting for exactly the kinds of conflicts of interest that we've been discussing, to ensure that the American people know exactly what Hillary Clinton did as Secretary of State regarding the Clinton Foundation, so they'll know what might happen if she's president.
Now, some senator would say, well, this is just politically motivated. You've got, Republicans calling on, investigation hearings into the Democratic presidential nominee. This is simply partisan politics. But there's something much deeper here, because what this does, in my view, is that it literally shakes the confidence that the American people can have in their government if we have a system that will not at least ask the questions and look into alleged activities that are potentially illegal. I mean, that has a potential of growing and leading to more lawlessness within our society.
Yeah, Tony, this is far from partisan. This is a fundamental question about the rule of law and respecting the rule of law and protecting the American people from undue foreign interference in the conduct of our foreign policy. You know, you've been around government for a long time. It's one thing to meet with key and influential people who are American citizens, who employ a lot of people in your state, or who represent large advocacy groups like yours, Tony. It's another thing to be doing that, though, for foreigners, for foreign businessmen, for these shady oligarchs, or for leaders from repressive governments. I don't think many people who have served in Democratic or Republican White Houses, for instance, would tell you that they would just take a meeting from some foreign businessman or some foreign political leader without running through a careful vetting process at the State Department to ensure that they know exactly who they're meeting with and that their goals are aligned and that they're consistent with stated U.S. policy. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so troublesome that the Clinton Foundation had this backdoor concierge service set up directly to the office of the Secretary of State. And why we need to get to the bottom of exactly what was happening.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, Senator, before I meet with you, I'm not making any contributions to a foundation, so that's not going to happen. Let's transition here quickly. We're almost out of time, but you're going to be at the Values Voter this year, Values Voter Summit. What are you going to be talking to our voters about? What do you think's at the forefront that they need to hear?
So I'm looking forward to being there Saturday night to help celebrate Bill Bennett, who is going to be the guest of honor at the big dinner. Bill Bennett was a big influence on my life growing up, reading mm-hmm. things like the Index of Leading Cultural Indicators or the Book of Virtues. And I thought I always respected Bill because of the key connection he drew between self-government on the one hand and self-government on the other.
Right.
That the Republican form of government presumes self-governing citizens who can, operate as independent agents, who can take care of themselves, who have control of their faculties, and who are prepared to go out into the world and become good, upstanding citizens that are providing for their families and helping their communities and building their churches and raising the next generation of citizens. To me, that's been much of Bill's life work, and we need to remember those lessons today.
And it's going to be a great time Saturday night as we have that gala. Look forward to seeing you there. Senator, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Tony. Bye-bye.
All right, Senator Tom Cotton. When we come back, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann is here. Don't go away.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello everyone, I'm Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
On October 6th and 7th, College of the Ozarks in beautiful Branson, Missouri will host the Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty. Confirmed speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Liberty Institute President Kelly Shackelford, and from the American Family Association, Abraham Hamilton III.
The founders enshrined religious liberty as the first among the freedoms protected in the Bill of Rights because they recognized that the prosperity of the American Republic rose or fell with its religious freedom.
As our nation spirals into a deeper moral pit, this event may reconnect attendees with the intents of the Founding Fathers. It's high time Christians did something to preserve our liberties before they're lost forever. The Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty is designed to inspire participants with a greater resolve through better understanding of the issue. The cost is $50 per person, and student admission is free. More information is available at afr.net.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian health care sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable health care for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your health care. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical health care. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Hey, just reminding you, tomorrow is the big day. Values Voter Summit kicks off here in Washington, D.C. Great lineup of speakers. My next guest, Michelle Bachman, will be there. George Barna, Gary Bauer, David and Jason Benham. Of course, we just heard in talking with Senator Cotton, who will be there Saturday night at our gala, where we will present the 2016 Leadership Award. We'll go to Dr. Bill Bennett. That's going to be great. Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky will be here. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, of course, my favorite general, General Boykin, Congressman Jim Bridenstine, Kirk Cameron, David DeLeiden, Governor Doug Ducey, Congressman John Fleming, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest of North Carolina, Louie Gohmert's going to be there. While the list keeps going on, General Gary Harrell of Black Hawk Down, Jim Jordan, Congressman of Ohio, Senator James Lankford, Colonel Ollie North, Governor Mike Pence, Donald Trump, Reince Priebus, Dr. Everett Piper, Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty is going to be there, Senator Rick Santorum, and Senator Tim Scott, Todd Starnes, John Voight, Colonel Alan West, and the list goes on. So, there's still time to get there. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, at the end of last month, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson was speaking at a newsmaker's breakfast here in D.C., and here's a clip of what he had to say.
I do think that we should carefully consider whether our election system, our election process, is critical infrastructure. Like the financial sector, like the power grid. The election process contributes to, there is a vital national interest in our election process. So I do think we need to consider whether it should be considered by my department and others critical infrastructure.
So what does that mean, critical infrastructure? Could there be an effort to federalize our election system? And if so, what could that mean to the election system? More importantly, what could it mean for the presidential election that's happening in just 60 days? Joining me now with the answer, former presidential candidate and congresswoman from the state of Minnesota, our good friend Michelle Bachmann. Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Great to be on your show.
All right, let's start with that definition. What does critical infrastructure mean?
Well, normally, when you're talking about Homeland Security, critical infrastructure means roads, bridges, interchanges, dikes, water reservoirs, the essential elements that government must provide to be able to keep a society functioning. Voting is extremely important. It is foundational to our country, but it does not come under the level of critical infrastructure. Under our Constitution, it's the states and localities that run these elections. And I'll tell you, I don't think that this was just a slip. I don't think that this was something that the Secretary of Homeland Security just brought up on his own. From my mind and from what I've seen from Washington, D.C., we have a lawless president in Barack Obama who has taken actions that do not pass the constitutional test. Jay Johnson himself doesn't uphold the laws of our land when it comes to securing our borders. And I think, Tony, every one of your listeners should worry that this administration could possibly not only seek to federalize these elections, but also be aiding and abetting what effectively is stealing an election to ensure the right outcome so that in their mind, Hillary Clinton wins the presidency.
So let's say they do make this declaration that our election system is a critical infrastructure, therefore gives the Department of Homeland Security jurisdiction of sorts over it. What could they do? What would that mean?
Well, what it could mean is that federal government officers would stand over basically each of the voting machines, and the federal government would be the one to do the counting of the ballots as opposed to the state and local government. They could be the ones that take jurisdiction over these electronic voting machines. After the election law called HAVA was passed, there are some voting machines now that do not have a paper ballot anymore. We don't have any backup. So if you have all of your election results on a digital source on a voting machine and you don't have any backup, and if someone hacks into that voting machine, they can adjust the numbers to say whatever they want to say. In fact, there was not very long ago an example of someone who did, in fact, hack into an American voting machine. It only took them 7 minutes to do it. So I think that it's important that we do have involvement, but the federal government cannot take over, run, supervise, and take over this voting system. Because at that point, I think we should be screaming from the housetops that the administration is trying to steal this election and put the fix in.
My experience has been on issues such as natural disasters or man-made disasters, like, for instance, the oil spill in the Gulf there off Louisiana coast. When Homeland Security comes in, they take over. So if they take over our elections, they could exclude local officials, which have the state constitutional authority to oversee elections. And you're right, there then becomes very little oversight of what the federal government is doing.
Well, that's right. But we have an obvious solution to this issue of cyber attacks, and it's actually a very old-fashioned solution. Every single locality, every single precinct should have paper ballots. And so when the voter comes up to cast their vote, they should cast a ballot on paper and also electronically. And then the paper ballots need to be kept locked, and there needs to be one Republican and one Democrat for every single voting machine that ensures that there is no voter fraud or tampering, so that if there needs to be a recount, the electronic voting can be tallied against the paper ballot. That's something that we have time to do. We can have that done. We can ensure that there's a safe process. And I actually think, in light of all of the cyber attacks that even the Department of Homeland Security itself has endured, they weren't able to save themselves from cyber attacks I think in light of that, it would be prudent to have everyone fill out a paper ballot.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, we're up against the break. Can you hold on? Because I got one more question for you. If you can hold on 2 minutes, I'll ask you on the other side of the break, okay?
Sure.
All right. Folks, Michelle Bachman's going to stick around. I hope you will as well. On the other side of the break, I'm going to ask her what can be done to stop the Department of Homeland Security from taking these actions. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Oil prices get a little bit of a bump out of China as China increases dramatically their imports of crude oil. Listen, let's understand, it is not because China's industrial production and manufacturing production is going through the roof. Generally, when we see imports of crude oil going into China, for years, that has been a signal that the economy in China is improving, getting better or growing, and that generally is a good thing, right? Not so in this case. Crude imports are going up as record exports of gasoline continue to go through the roof. The imports of oil are so they can refine it and export it. Their exports in general are still down once again, but their exports of gasoline continue to set records. So a little bit of a different take on why oil prices are going up, but nonetheless, imports to China is going up, and that's helping oil prices, unfortunately, for the wrong reason. But here's another piece of economic data that is extremely important. One out of six men of working age, one out of six, do not have a job. That is worse than it was in the Great Depression. And I don't know how many times I have to say that we will not survive with a 1978 labor participation rate and a 2% GDP growth. But that is, and this will be, the legacy of this president.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, continuing our conversation with Michelle Bachman. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson, at the end of last month, just a couple of weeks ago, not quite 2 weeks ago, was speaking at a newsmaker breakfast here, the Christian Science Monitor. I've spoken there before. They just kind of have people come in. They just kind of talk. And well, while he was talking, he suggested that our election system could be critical infrastructure, which means there's like 16 areas of critical infrastructure that the Department of Homeland Security has designated, which gives them jurisdiction over. So we've been talking about this with former Congresswoman Michelle Bachman. Michelle, so what can be done to prohibit them from stepping in and declaring the election systems, which I think there's roughly about 9,000 different ones when you consider state, local jurisdictions? What could Congress do to prevent them from doing this?
Well, the most powerful tool we have is the Constitution. The Constitution prohibits the Department of Homeland Security, in other words, the federal government, from nationalizing these local and state elections. And what Congress could do is this. They could announce in no uncertain terms in a letter to the White House and to Jay Johnson that if the White House is thinking of nationalizing this upcoming election, Congress will seek impeachment. They'll seek impeachment of Jay Johnson. They'll seek impeachment of any federal officer that tries to implement this unconstitutional act. Congress should have done this on many of the unconstitutional actions that President Obama has taken. But this is their last chance to prove themselves. And I really believe this is what the Republicans need to do. Make an announcement that we're on to you, Mr. President. We're not going to stand for it. And then actively put together a plan, including both Democrats and Republicans, to ensure that the ballot box is nonpartisan and remains as the Constitution states, in charge by the local and state governments.
You know, they're working now on a short-term CR, a continuing resolution. I talked about this yesterday on the program. Unfortunately, they do this. We had Congressman Jim Bridenstine on talking about this, how unfortunately the government under Barack Obama has not passed any budgets or appropriation bills. They simply do by continuing resolution. But they're working on that now in the month that expires. Would that be a place to say that no funds can be expended by the federal government that would have, you know, try to take or usurp the local government's authority over elections?
Absolutely. In fact, that would be the first tool of choice, because the number one tool Congress has is the power of the purse, and they should nip that in the bud by withholding any funds if anything like that happens. Unfortunately, what we've seen happen in Congress is that they refuse to do anything to alter funding because they're deathly afraid of shutting down the government. I actually think that the American people would support Congress if Congress explained that the president is trying to fix the outcome of this election. People would be outraged. So I think people should take the president's threat, because I think the threat is out there, and I think they should address it in this continuing resolution. But I also think they need to make an announcement to inform the public of what the president may intend to do, and already declare that they will bring impeachment proceedings against any federal official who tries to carry out this unconstitutional directive.
I think you're absolutely right. I think this is a nonpartisan issue or a bipartisan issue.
Absolutely.
And I think the American people would say, hey, if Congress is going to draw the line saying that, look, we're not going to have the federal government taking over the local election process, that Republicans and Democrats alike would support Congress, the Republicans, if they were to do that in the funding mechanism for Congress or for the government.
Absolutely. The people would stand by them on so many of these issues, Tony, if the Congress just would have had the will and the courage to stand up to the president's unconstitutional actions, the people would have their back. I don't think people fear this threatened shutdown of the government as much as members of Congress have been led to believe. I think the people will stand by them, because we realize a lot has happened to destroy the United States in the last 7.5 years, and people want us to stand up at least for a safe election. Otherwise, why are we bothering to go through these primaries and this huge long process of electing a president, only to have it undermined by having the president steal the election, by having the federal government, in an unprecedented first ever time of taking over the state and local duty of running elections? It would be unheard of.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us. And again, looking forward to seeing you at the Values Voter Summit.
It's going to be great. Thanks again, Tony, and to all your listeners as well. Bye-bye.
All right. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. She's going to be one of our speakers at the Values Voter Summit. And again, there's still time to register and be there. Begins tomorrow morning. Okay, folks, when we come back, I want to hear from you. I mean, does this concern you? Are you concerned that the Department of Homeland Security, the Obama administration, may be taking steps toward a federal takeover of elections? I mean, look, I'm just asking. Are you concerned? Do you think that could be happening? I mean, these. I played the clip. I'll play it again when we come back, so you can hear it for yourselves. I didn't say it. Jay Johnson said it. He said, we may need to declare the election system as critical infrastructure, giving them jurisdiction over it. We're going to talk about it when we come back. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins.
What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example. This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more.
If you're like most folks, when life crashes around you, you want your pastor to come to help. It used to always be that way. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, host of Stand in the Gap Weekend, heard here Sunday at 6 p.m. Central Time. You know, God still intends pastors to apply biblical principles to your physical and spiritual pain. Listen here this Sunday at 6 p.m. Central Time as we discuss the biblical and historical role of pastors. For more information, go to standinthegapradio.com.
You experienced a call to ministry later in life, and now you're in a second career. You like to call it your calling. You know you need more preparation, but how? Where? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, where an online Master of Divinity degree can be tailor-made for you. Small class size, individual attention, learning opportunities that fit your busy schedule. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where we equip the called. WBS.edu.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. When the national anthem is sung, we stand. We're grateful. Colin Kaepernick chose to sit, claiming a stand against racism. Conservative Review responded to the 49ers quarterback saying, "Colin Kaepernick, you're a disgrace. You sat during the national anthem to protest racism in America. You're promoting Black Lives Matter propaganda instead of the truth. Racism? Oppression? Really? Look in the mirror, pal. Your life proves America's not racist. Racism didn't stop you from being adopted by a white couple. Racism didn't stop you from using your God-given talents to become an NFL quarterback. Racism didn't stop you from signing a $114 million contract. You rejected reality and adopted propaganda. Your actions have insulted an untold number of Americans that fought and died for freedom, the freedom that has allowed you to pursue your dreams. Colin Kaepernick, your life story shows America is exceptional, not racist." This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. All right, phone lines are lit up. And I want to play the clip for you again, all right? Because, you know, people say, oh, conspiracy theories. You know, they think that the government's trying to take over black helicopters. No, look, this is Jay Johnson, Homeland Security Secretary. This is from his own lips.
I do think that we should carefully consider whether our election system, our election process, is critical infrastructure, like the financial sector, like the power grid. The election process contributes to, there is a vital national interest in our election process. So I do think we need to consider whether it should be considered by my department and others critical infrastructure.
All right, there you have it. Now, as I said, there's about 16 areas that are called critical infrastructures. And this gives the federal government, once they declare this, control, certain levels of control, right? There are some, as I said, I think 9,000 jurisdictions involved in the election process. What all would that mean? I don't know. But anything the federal government gets into, I mean, how are they going to control the entire election system in the country? How are they going to secure it? Now, this is being driven because there have been some local election systems that have been hacked, all right? I mean, how do they can't even protect their own stuff. I mean, what are they going to do? Put it on Hillary's server? That seems to be one that nobody can get a hold of. Except the Russians and the Chinese and everybody else. Look, I don't put anything past this administration. This is going to go down in history as the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States. I mean, once, you know, I know the revisionist will, the left will get to the history books as soon as they can and prevent it from being written, but an honest assessment will show that this was the most corrupt administration in history of this country. So, what do you think? Are you concerned? Do you think that this could be a move by the Department of Homeland Security to take over the election system? Are you concerned about that? Let's talk about it. Let's go to Texas, where Doreen is on the line. Doreen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. I just want to say I'm upset about this, and I'm upset that who can we call on? Like Michelle said, we have Congress that is not fighting Washington. How do we get them to fight Washington? I know Ted Cruz is probably on the forefront of this, but who else can we call? Who is working on our side today?
Well, it's a good point. I mean, people have kind of given up on Republicans because there's no fight there. This is one of those issues, as I was talking with Michelle about. I think the American people would support them in fighting across the political aisle. I think Democrats, there are Democrats who want fair and free elections, just like the Republicans do. I'll start with, you can contact your member of Congress, all right? And I'll give you the Capitol switchboard number if you don't already have it memorized. It's 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121, and just simply say, look, I'm concerned. Comments by Jay Johnson, Homeland Security, suggest that they're trying to federalize our election system. And that's exactly what he said. So you communicate that, and as we talked about, the way Congress could stop it is right now. I mean, as we speak, they are working on this continuing resolution and putting language in there to ensure that no federal money will be spent to federalize an election system or interfere with local elections. That's one way to nip it in the bud, as Michelle said, very quickly. Doreen, thanks so much for calling. Barney Fife also said that. Nip it. Let's go to Tennessee, where Chris is on the line. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Perkins. Number one, thank you for your service as a veteran. Thank you to Michelle Bachman and all of the activists out there. Do what I'm going to do. I'm going to have some time off next week, and I'm not even going to bother calling Congress because they have backtracked so many times. They have given in, and as Congresswoman Bachman said, they have failed to impeach President Obama and his lawless activities and people within that administration. So this is what I'm going to do. I am going to print out on the printer a simple statement. Request stop election fraud. Request a paper ballot and a copy of your ballot. And I'm going to go to the independent owners of businesses in my community and ask them if they're concerned and if they would like to post that in their window. Let's forget about Congress. It's mm-hmm. up to us. We need to get people actively involved in getting people aware of casting a paper ballot. And as far as I'm concerned, when Election Day comes out there, I'm going to be there on the street corner with that same sign. I'm going to have that sign. I'm going to try and do it during early voting, but it's up to us. We cannot depend upon the Congress. They have backtracked and they have conceded to this administration, and so it is up to us. Get out there in the community. See if you can get that statement put into the windows of independent businesses, and just if we can just make people aware, get a paper ballot and get a copy of that paper ballot yeah. so that you have your proof. I don't see calling Congress as any help. I can't see it helping, Tony. So yeah.
I appreciate your frustration, Chris, and I can't say I disagree with you because we've seen time and time again where where Congress, the Republicans, have refused to fight. I mean, we did have the one fight a couple of years ago. You know, Ted Cruz led the fight against the funding of Obamacare and the CR, and the president decided he wanted to shut the government down. The Republicans got all scared and got so scared that in the next election they actually won the Senate. When you stand for something, people respect that. And you're right. Look, that's one of the things we do, is that we take initiative right where we are doing what we can. So, Chris, I applaud you for that. But I still think we should also call Congress in the process and let them know that we care about these things, that they matter. And look, the reason I played the clip is that that sounds like one of those things you've been hearing for a long time about, you think the president might suspend the elections? You think he might do that? I don't buy into conspiracy theories and all of these far-fetched things. That's why I wanted to play it for you to hear for yourself. That is what the Secretary of Homeland Security said. Now, I'm not saying that they were going to take over the elections and everything. I'm saying that it could lead to that. And my concern is that it could lead to that. I mean, if you're going to declare it a critical infrastructure giving you authority over it, what are you going to do with that authority? It's a question that is legitimate, that should be asked. And Congress should slap their hand preemptively and say, no, I don't think so. Chris, thanks so much for listening and for calling in. Let's go to Kentucky, where Joseph is on the line. Joseph, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, for taking my call. I love Michelle Bachmann, and I think she does a great job. I agree with her on a lot of things. I have been concerned about the electronic ballots for many years. I've been voicing my concerns about it being hacked.
Right.
Because in a network system, the only solution to me is to jump ahead of this and for the state to go strictly paper ballot. There is no way that they could claim it was hacked if it wasn't electronic.
That's true. That's very true. You're right. There have been questions about the integrity of these electronic machines and the companies that make them, and whether they're open to fraudulent activity. The more complex things get, the more simple the answers. Paper ballot. Maybe we should even do what they did over there in Iraq and dip people's finger in purple ink when they voted, so we don't get the voter fraud. All right, Joseph, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Texas, where Chris is on the line. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thank you. Thank you for your ministry and for this radio show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. You're welcome.
And first of all, when has the federal government done anything good with any power they've ever had over anything as far as America is concerned? I mean, they've botched just about everything they've taken over. So why should we trust them with this?
Well, World War II, they did a good job.
Okay.
We kept the world from falling into the hands of the Nazi war machine. But yeah, you're right. It's we're hard pressed to find out in modern times what the government has done, whether it's been in the hands of Republicans or Democrats.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that World War II. Hitler ruled by law as well, and just because they want to make this a law doesn't make it right. And I believe the founding fathers had in mind that the states and county municipalities would be the last defense against the federal government. And now they're trying to take one more thing away from the states and the counties.
Well, you know what? And it's prompted something. As I think about that, Chris, I said this a month ago or maybe longer, when the White House declared that there would be bathroom policies all the way down to the local school level, telling them what the policy would be governing the bathrooms. And I said, if they can control the bathrooms, then there's nothing
outside their reach. So it's not far-fetched to think that they're going to take over the election system if they can take over the bathrooms. If that's, you know, the president declared bathrooms critical infrastructure from his perspective, what's to keep them from going after the elections? But you're actually, they have decimated the idea of federalism, the separation of powers or the different levels of power from the authority, from the local government, state government, and the federal government. I mean, they have completely obliterated that concept with their policies and their laws. And this is a logical step if they were to take it. Now, I know how they'll respond to this, Chris, as they always do. These are what's called trial balloons. They put it out there, and they see what kind of response they get from the public. And, of course, if people, which I hope you will, I hope you'll respond to this by, again, calling your member of Congress. You can Google this. It was a Washington Examiner article that had this and had the clip. Send it around on your Facebook, on your social media. And of course, they'll say, oh, that was never going to happen. That was never going to happen. You got those people who just, you know, they see black helicopters. Really. The reason they're backing off is because they're getting the pushback. Now, if they don't get pushback, they think, well, you know what? We might be able to do this. And they would push forward with it. So, and that's the way things work in Washington. They do these trial balloons just to kind of see if there's any response to it. And if they don't get much pushback, then they think, hey, we can make this happen. And they push forward on it. But if there's strong pushback or backlash, then they'll think twice and they'll just kind of deny that they ever were thinking about it. I'm telling you, folks, that's the way it works. So it is important to respond to these things and say, you know what? You have no business even thinking that, let alone doing it. So that Congress, the Congressional Switchboard, 202-224-3121, call your member of Congress. They're in today and tomorrow. They'll be in the House. They'll be having votes tomorrow as we will launch the Values Voter Summit tomorrow morning. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You'll be able to see some of it actually on Facebook. We'll be broadcasting it or putting it out there live on Facebook, some of the different segments from the Values Voter Summit. So just go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over, go to FRCAction.org or TheValuesVoterSummit.org. And you might be able to catch parts of it. But if you can get here, especially if you're, you know, within driving distance, come on over tomorrow and Saturday and join us for what I think is going to be a great 11th Annual Values Voter Summit as we move into what I think is going to be one of the most critical elections in the history of our country. Every election is important. But, folks, I believe this election is critical. So I do hope that you will be praying as we move toward this election in the next 60 days. Praying that God would move on the hearts of people to be engaged, to be involved. Pray that God would direct us to make the right choices, not just in the presidential election, but in the Senate is up for grabs. Pray about Congress. Pray about those local offices. But pray that as Christians, we would be salt and light and we would be engaged in the process. Pray for our country, folks. Our country is in trouble, but God can turn it around. And you know what he does? He uses people to make it happen. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm going to be back, Lord willing, again tomorrow night as we're broadcasting from the Values Voter Summit. So I hope you will join us. Until then, yes, I'm going to leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.